Welcome to another episode of Protect the Paint podcast. I am Brian McCormick. My co-host Patrick has joined me today as well. Pat, what's going on?
Not much. Glad to be back on. Hello, everyone. Thanks for listening to us, watching us.
I know
us,
you were hoping for a better outcome this series, Pat. Maybe six or seven games. You texted me beforehand saying, "Oh, it's going to be awful if this ends." You know, it kind of takes away some of the flash of the headlines and the talk points. But Denver was better all around, and I think we both knew that, you know, for the most part going in many areas. Miami was playing with a lot of, you know, bench or role players consistently. And I had to get up to the Heat because they played well to get to this point. If you simulated this postseason 100 times, the Heat might make the finals twice, in my opinion, as good as they are. They would just got, you know, hot at the right moment there. And we'll get into all that of, you know, their collapse here in the finals. But Denver was better all around. They built the franchise around Jokic perfectly, in my opinion, because it doesn't seem like the offense ever stops. There's someone cutting. There's someone, you know, going to the basket every time, you know, they get the ball. They're shooting, you know, wide open threes almost every possession. They get a great look. What did you look for? And I guess what's your recap of yesterday, Pat? I know you weren't surprised that Denver won, but what was your feeling overall for the game?
Yeah, I mean, I was completely wrong saying Miami was going to win the two games at home. Completely wrong. I mean, it's kind of rare for me to be that off base. Miami looked like they knew how to beat Denver in game two. But then game three, Denver came in and dominated. And same with game four, right? So it was just really, like you said, it's impressive how well built the team is. Jokic is the clear star. He might be considered the best player in the NBA now after winning the championship. I think that's pretty clear. Just the way he impacts the game, and he can do it in so many different ways that he almost is like two or three players in one. So that makes it easier to build a team around him because he's rebounding, he's shooting from the outside, he's facilitating, he's scoring a one-on-one down low. You know, it's put any players that you want around him, they're going to be better than they are without him. And you're going to win more games with him. So it seemed like he outplayed both of Miami's stars, Butler and Adebayo, even though they played relatively well. It seemed like Denver's strategy was to force them to beat them, which was almost the opposite of the other teams that played Miami, right? They shut down Bam and Jimmy, and then the other players beat them. Whereas Denver almost put more pressure on the role players and said, okay, Jimmy and Bam, you have the ball, go ahead and win. And it worked. So congrats to Denver.
Yeah, I saw that Jokic led the postseason in points, rebounds, and assists. Is that good?
it's pretty good. Yeah, I mean, what else can you do? Blocks, I guess.
You know, maybe steals. You see Jokic stealing on a fast break. How fast he is, right? But yeah, I thought that was amazing, and Jokic won the Finals MVP, which is not surprising whatsoever. He averaged 30, 14, and 7 in the series, and I'm just looking at, you know, the series as a whole, because you brought up, you know, Jimmy, and they wanted Bam and Jimmy to beat them. And then the role players, obviously, you know, they weren't much help here, but it just felt like Jimmy shot 41% this series, but it felt like he shot 25%. I'm not sure if it was just me looking at it, but I felt like there were a few games where Jimmy started out like 3-for-10, 3-for-11, and then halftime hit, right? And then you see last night, the game's close in the fourth quarter because of Jimmy. He goes off, 11 points in a matter of 2 or 3 minutes in the game. But he was 5-for-18 last night. And I think at one point was like shooting 2-for-13 before the fourth quarter, something like that. So I was just waiting for him to have that Jimmy game, right? He had about 4 Jimmy games against the Milwaukee Bucks when they beat them. He had many of them against Boston too. But I'm not sure he didn't blame his injury, his injured ankle, to his, you know, lackluster performance here, but I was just waiting for him to go off, and it never happened.
Yeah, I don't think it's his ankle. He hurt that in the Knicks series, and he came back and played really well very quickly, right? So he had tough defenders on him the whole time, I guess. Like, the Denver had larger defenders. They switched between Aaron Gordon, I saw, defending him, right? Michael Porter, they're all 6'10", and they're stronger than him. Maybe that's the difference. You know, Jimmy Butler is usually stronger than whoever's guarding him, and that's one major advantage he has. Not the case with whoever was guarding him in this series. Every shot he took was tough. He just didn't have enough. Like, he didn't play better than Jokic and Murray, right? He didn't play better than Murray even. So that's what it came down to, are the stars in the end. And Denver just had a better game plan than Miami.
I like that you brought up that Jimmy can usually back down anyone, because I found it, you know, ironic that Jimmy in this series, he's going up against those 6'10 guys who are built like him or stronger. You know, Aaron Gordon is hard to move. But then on the flip side, you know, instead of Jimmy bullying a Derek White like he did in the Eastern Conference Finals, you see Aaron Gordon going after Gabe Vincent almost the entire series, and Max Strus, right? So it felt like, I'm not saying that Aaron Gordon played like Jimmy at Jimmy's best, right? But it felt like Aaron Gordon took that approach, hey, I'm just going to back down everyone and seal them at the basket and get easy lanes. And I just don't think he gets enough praise. I know a lot of the announcers were giving him, you know, some credit, but not only for his performance, but he sacrificed a lot as well. And I'm not saying that, you know, he is the star of any franchise, but he was the quote-unquote franchise in Orlando. And he was the guy that was taking those game-winning shots, right? Whether you liked him or not in that role. But he found his, you know, true role in Denver, and they've exploited, you know, many of his, you know, I guess you could say shortages. You can, you know, is the best way to put it. They like really helped him blossom into the guy that he is today. So not only am I commending him for playing well, but also just accepting his role. And that's why he put a ring on his finger.
Yeah, it's the same Jokic effect, right? He's better playing with him. He shouldn't not be the primary ball handler, Gordon, but he's, you know, a great finisher at the basket, energy guy, great rebounder. He's hitting from corner threes now too. I mean, that's new, I would say. And he just fits really well on the team, like you said. So he made a couple nice passes too. So I think his whole mindset changed, going from being that main option in Orlando to being on a well-rounded team with a MVP caliber player. His mentality changed, and he's learned what it takes to win. So kudos to him for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for a while, you know, his contract looked pretty awful, to where like you might just trade him to OKC for a draft pick, right? Just to dump it. And now Denver found a role for him, and it does help playing next to, you know, a two-time MVP obviously as well. But he looks like a completely different player. And I think that his defense, especially on Jimmy, like you pointed out, was one of the deciding factors in this series. And we talked about it before we hopped on here, but we're so accustomed to seeing the Miami Heat out hustle their opponents. Like the last 4 years, you know, whether the Heat have won or lost a series, they always out hustled. And what really struck me this series is that I felt like for every play the Heat made to out hustle Denver, Denver had 5 or 10 of them. And I'm watching last night when the Heat needed some stops, and all of a sudden, you know, Michael Porter Jr. on the offensive boards finds a lay-in. Aaron Gordon pulls out an offensive rebound and passes it for a wide open three. And I feel like the Heat just maybe, I'm not going to say they weren't expecting it, but they're not used to another team out hustling them.
Yeah, that's a great point. I don't know if it all caught up to them. You know, they've had a really tough series all along the way through the playoffs. Maybe it finally caught up with them. I was expecting Denver to get tired out. Miami gets in a really attack mode, right? They move the ball a lot. They tire out the other team. But whenever that seemed to happen, you know, Jokic would then bring the ball up the court, and he would keep Denver in the game. You know, they never got too far behind. And he would always give them the confidence that they needed to hit shots. And to in the end give better effort, right? I think the length that everyone was talking about the whole series really was a big factor in Denver winning, right? The defense of Aaron Gordon playing outside most of the game, it seemed like, playing defense on Jimmy Butler, standing in the corner and doing it well enough, you know? So it's just a bad matchup for Miami. They're tired out the whole way through the playoffs. Denver wanted it more, I guess. So
yeah, it felt like really chaotic, I would say. So I'm watching the first quarter and it felt like a game seven, if that makes sense. So I know that Denver can close it. The Miami Heat are desperate. So there was that game seven desperation within the game. But it started out, what was it, Pat? Like with 7 or 6 minutes left, the Heat take a timeout and it's like 6-5 for the score. Like some guys were hitting, they were missing wide open shots, but they're wide open, right? And the ball just would not go into the basket. So I felt like I was watching a game seven reminiscence of like the Celtics Lakers, where like the one final was like, you know, 78-76 or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So we saw the offense finally pick up and the Heat got off to a lead, but then Denver, like you said, just stayed in the game the entire time.
Yeah. They seemed like the more experienced team, you know. I have to say the Denver crowd, maybe people believe in this or not, but the fans in Denver were a lot more into the game and standing up and cheering the whole game than the Miami fans were in Miami. I was kind of shocked by how terrible the fans were in Miami. Maybe they're spoiled at this point, you know, since they had LeBron and, you know, they're going to win 6, 7, 8 championships, you know, I don't know, but you know, they're all wearing white, you know, I don't like that to start. And then the whole game, they're sitting there calm, right? Sitting down. And, you know, I'm from New York and you don't do that in a playoff game. Like you get kicked out of the arena if you're sitting down during a playoff game, right? So I don't know what's going on. Maybe they're too happy in their own lives on the beach. I don't know, but I partly blame the fans. Maybe that's controversial, but they didn't energize their players to win. So, and Denver's fans did, absolutely. So maybe they're spoiled. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's why I was so shocked when I tweeted you, but I saw a tweet that said the Heat have sold out every home game since like 2009 or 2010. And I found that hilarious because like there was always this rumor that even when LeBron, Wade, and Bosh were there, like fans wouldn't show up till the second quarter. Like they would just miss the entire first quarter, you know, I guess really? Showering after the beach or what. But that was always the rumor in Miami. But the crowds were loud, you know, at the end of the games for LeBron and co. But I just always found that, you know, strange how that was at least the rumor that I've seen all over the NBA, you know, media throughout the years is they just come at the second quarter or halftime and then they leave early as well.
Yeah, I was surprised. I don't know. They need to find some way to get the fans back in. You know, them being a Cinderella, you know, maybe they I guess it's possible they expended all their energy on all the other series that they had to win to get to the finals. That would make sense. But yeah, maybe they don't find Jimmy Butler as exciting as LeBron. Who knows?
I mean, yeah, it was a great story for the Heat, right? I mean, they go through the 1 and 2 seed, you know, and your beloved Knicks as well. I mean, they had a great postseason. I don't feel like this is a failure on their end at all. But I've said, you know, they were like a fireworks show and eventually the finale is going to end. And I think that's what happened in this series. You know, as we discussed in the last pod, Miami relies heavily on the 3-point shot. They shot about 42% from the Celtics in that series. And that was a huge reason why the Celtics were not in the finals. Miami was really cold from 3-point land in this series. So both teams, I'll, you know, put it out there. Both teams did not shoot well at all from beyond the arc. So Miami was 34%. Denver was 33%. But Miami took 40 more threes than Denver. So not only are they missing shots, but they're missing their usual bread and butter. So it's essentially coming down to a 2-point game, you know, 2-point basket game between the Heat and the Nuggets. And you have, you know, the MVP in Jokic who can score inside at will on the other end.
That's a great stat you brought up. That's a big difference, right? If you're shooting a lot more threes and same percentage, it's a lot bigger impact. I don't know why that is. Could be the taller, longer defenders. What do you think the cause of that is?
I mean, I think it's, you know, I thought Denver played really well, close out defense on their perimeter shooters. I'm not going to say it was every single game, but especially the two games in Miami, they were closing out hard on those Heat shooters. And I thought it was the same, especially in the last 5 minutes of the game last night. Not that, you know, there was no defense at all last night, but, you know, when you're getting close to clinching a finals or you're getting close to being eliminated from a finals, you see that defense tighten up. And I thought it was a great defensive game all around last night. But the last 5 minutes of that game last night, I mean, the Heat were trying their best to get a good look. And aside from Jimmy, you know, hitting a couple of those threes and, you know, kicking Aaron Gordon in the balls to get a foul call, which we'll talk about in a second here. But aside from some of those, like, maybe three or four looks in the last 5 minutes, I thought they struggled to get, you know, a wide open shot. And you saw that with Jimmy's, you know, was it the 10 seconds left? He tried to take a three to tie the game. Like, he's off balance, fading away, spinning. They just couldn't get any good looks from on the perimeter from the defense of Denver.
Yeah. I watched all of the Knicks Heat series, and the Heat did not get any easy shots most of those games, and they were hitting them. Falling. Kyle Lowry hitting threes while he's falling down. Max Strus looking like Larry Bird. No matter what, you know, they're hitting threes. So I think your earlier point about them relying too much on the three finally bit them in the behind. Maybe that's it. You know, Denver last night, they started out turning the ball over almost every possession. Miami could not capitalize on it, though. They weren't hitting any shots, couldn't pull away by more than, you know, a few points here and there. And it just felt like all along the way, it was only a matter of time before Denver got back in the game and took control.
Yeah, I felt like in the third quarter, especially, Michael Porter Jr. in transition, I think it's tied at 66, if I'm not mistaken about the score. But he rolls down the court and stops on a dime and shoots a three-pointer and drains it. And
yeah,
at the moment, given the Heat's effort and they got out to that lead, you know, I wouldn't say that they blew the lead because
that was when they took the lead. Yeah.
But like, yeah, you see Denver come right back into the game. Like, it felt like Miami gave it their best punch and Denver's like, hold a second, we're right here still. So in that moment, I'm thinking, you know, Denver is going to close this out relatively easily, in my opinion, the roll away in the fourth quarter. And then in the fourth quarter, as much as people get down on him or make fun of him, you know, and I've been in that camp before, Lowry hit like two or three huge shots. I mean, I think he ended the fourth. He ended that third quarter with a huge three to, I think, you know, cut it to maybe two or maybe even tie it up at that point. It was a huge momentum swing there. And then the fourth quarter, he comes out and bangs a few threes. I think he had four threes in the game. So in that moment, I'm like, okay, like, you know, Miami's definitely going to win this game now, right? I feel that. And then it's tied up again. Denver takes that swing. And then I see Jimmy Butler just kicks Gordon in the balls. And the review gets upheld, which I was really shocked by because I don't think it was a foul on Gordon whatsoever. I'm very shocked that it was upheld. And I felt like for that moment, at least in that sequence, it felt like the NBA was trying to keep the Heat in the series.
Yeah, I mean, there's always that element to the playoffs, especially where the referees maybe not trying to fix an outcome of a game, but if they called a game a certain way the game before too much in favor of one team, they might try to reverse that the next game. You know, the league might tell them like, hey, you were wrong in one team's favor like 10 times last game, try to, you know, even it out a bit this game. So that's definitely in their head a bit. You know, I've heard they get pressured from the league, to be fair. I don't know for certain that's what was going on there, but didn't in the end affect the outcome of the game, right? I just think Denver was going to win last night no matter what. They took Miami's best shot twice in Miami and took their last ditch effort and knew how to handle it, right? So credit to them.
Yeah, we go back to the three-point shooting before I, let go of this point. But I was looking at the series stats, and I'm still shocked even looking at them. I have them right up in front of me. But Gabe Vincent shot 38% from the field and 33% from three. I mean, he shot 50% from three against Boston, just for reference there. Caleb Martin shot 62% against the Celtics. He shot 37% from the field.
Huh.
Lastly, this is my favorite. Max Strus shot 23% from the field. Not the three-point line, from the field in this series. From three, he shot 18%. Do you freeze, Pat?
Yo, man, sorry about that.
I don't know where it is.
It's this computer. So
no worries. We'll get rolling, all right? I'll bring up that next point, and then we'll keep going, all right?
Okay.
So going back to the three-point shooting for the series before we let this go, but I'm still shocked by what I see as far as the three-point stats for Miami here. So just to bring up a few individuals that helped them get to the finals here. Gabe Vincent, he shot 50% from three-point land against Boston. Against the Nuggets, he shot 38% from the field. Not just from three, 38% from the field. And he shot 33% from three.
Yeah, his free agency value went a little bit back down.
Right? Might have dipped a little bit. We'll see what happens with that. But Caleb Martin, who shot 62% from the field against Boston, he shot 37% against Denver.
Yeah, he took over that one game against Boston. You know, it was looking like an all-star player, and now he's looking like he, has the rest of his career. Michael Porter looked more like Caleb Martin did last night. So,
got one more for you too. My favorite here, Max Strus. Arguably their best pure shooter on the team. Shot 23%.
He claims so, yeah.
23% from the field. 18% from three for Max Strus.
Hey, what did he say? That, shooters are going to keep shooting. So
shooters shoot, I guess. It
seems like they wished he would have stopped last night, though. But
he better shoot all summer. I don't know what's going on there. But doesn't sound like a winning recipe for those three guys to go out like that.
No, and I don't know if it, at this point, I don't know if it's a testament to Denver's defense or more just a testament to how hard Miami had to fight all playoffs that they, finally they hit the wall. And it could be, it's in all likelihood, a combination of both. So,
yeah, I mean, ultimately, that's the reason that they lost the series, in my opinion. I think Jokic is dominant. He's going to do what he does. But in order for Miami to have won more than one game in the series, they had to shoot better. And they just didn't have the three-point shooting percentage this series. So, again, contested shots by Denver. Hats off to them. They deserve to win. And I think it's awesome that a franchise won its first title in history, you know, instead of seeing someone win their, you know. What was the... you know, the storyline going into the finals, everyone wanted to see the Celtics and Lakers rematch. Why? Honestly. And it's nothing against either of them, but I don't want to see the same thing. I don't want to see someone go for, you know, ring 18.
Yeah. I also don't want to see the Lakers, you know, coast into the playoffs as a low seed and then turn it on in the playoffs and make it and win or have a chance of winning. I didn't want to see that happen either. The Celtics, I'm not a big Celtics fan, disclaimer, but I think they're overrated, you know, so I all along didn't think they were going to make it. Did I think it was going to be Miami that got them out? No, I thought it might be Philly or Milwaukee, but they proved me wrong time and time again. And now they proved me wrong again by losing. So it's they're hard to predict. And no, I'm in the end, I'm happy Denver won. Like if I was rooting for a team to win, I would say Denver, just for that fact alone, the longest stretch in history, right? From when a team started before they won a championship. I think they beat Cleveland by 1 year, right? When Cleveland won the championship. So
no, that's a good point.
Still counts. And Jokic now is going to go down as one of the best in history by the end of his career. So
he's only 28 too, so you know that's what we're going to talk about next. Yeah. But you know, next up for Denver, I don't think they're going anywhere. Honestly, I think the one guy that they possibly could lose in free agency is Bruce Brown, but I think everyone else is pretty much going to come back. I think they have to re-sign Caldwell Pope, if I'm not mistaken. But pretty much, you know, 95%, 90% of that group is probably going to return next year. So we'll see what happens. Bruce Brown definitely earned more money. He only made $6.5 million this past season, just betting on himself. He was reported saying that he wasn't offered a ton of contracts at all, like maybe one or two prior to Denver. But he showed what he can do, and he unleashed, you know, a new part of him during the season, in my opinion, as well, too. So he can rebound, he can pass, he can shoot, he can drive. So I think he's going to definitely get about $15 million a year, if not more.
Yeah, they could find somebody to fill that role too. I mean, if Caldwell Pope is a free agent, though, they need to re-sign him, I think. He was a big part. You know, he was the one on the bench telling the players what to do, surprisingly. He was leading the team. Jokic is maybe not be – he's a leader on the court, but verbally, he doesn't seem like that kind of verbal leader. That actually seemed to be more so Caldwell Pope. So I think he's a big part of their team. And I'd say if they keep him, I agree with you. Without him, somebody else will have to step up to do that. So,
no, it's a great point. And I don't have the stats in front of me. Just by the eye test, just me watching the game, it looked like as far as at least someone who doesn't have a huge frame, you know, he doesn't weigh a ton. He really played great defense on Jimmy in many sequences from what I was seeing. Was very shocked by that, got in his face, contested a lot of shots too. So it just goes back to our previous points as well. But yeah, they definitely have to resign him if he's going to be a free agent. I think he is, you know, a pivotal piece. And he's a nice 3-and-D guy as well too. Doesn't need the ball in his hands, which is nice for Jokic and Murray too. So you have to resign those guys.
Yeah. I mean, you need every championship team seems to have a player like that, right?
Absolutely.
So,
which brings us to Miami as well too. Their offseason outlook, you know, there's going to be a ton of rumors floating around, but I'm hearing that they targeted Kyrie Irving at the trade deadline. I wonder if he's going to try to get there this summer. Who knows? There's a lot of baggage that comes with Kyrie, which goes without saying. But the Heat definitely need another scoring threat, in my opinion. You know, they need great, you know, they're going to stick with their great defense, but they need to have someone besides Jimmy that can take over in the fourth quarters. And, you know, Bam had a really great final series, but I feel like he disappeared in many of the fourth quarters as well, too. So if not Kyrie, they need someone that could put the ball in the basket, 20, 25 points a game. Yo.
Hey, man.
All right, we'll just recap Miami real quick, and then we'll get to the Sixers, and I think we'll be good after that. All right.
All right.
Cool. Yeah, so that brings us to Miami too. I'm curious to see what they do this off season. I saw a report that Miami tried targeting Kyrie Irving at the trade deadline. So you might see Kyrie Irving go to South Beach this summer. Who knows? There's going to be a ton of rumors floating around, on Twitter and whatnot, but Miami definitely needs another scorer, in my opinion. Bam Adebayo played really well this final series. He showed more than I thought he had left. I know he's young, but we just haven't seen him dominate in a very long time consistently. But you also need someone else too. When Jimmy is not going, or even just to alleviate Jimmy in those fourth quarters, you need another guy that can close the game as well too. So if not Kyrie, who has a lot of baggage, as we've seen before. They need to get a guy that can score 15 or 20 a night at the very least. I know Tyler Hero is coming back as well too, but I don't think he's that guy that's going to close games.
Yeah, Tyler Hero is a good sixth man on that team historically, and I think it'll be a big boost to get him back. But Kyrie, it makes sense on that team, right? At least basketball wise. So that might end up being where he goes. But I think Miami also needs more of a low post presence, outside of Bam. So.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I feel like they really, everyone struggles against Jokic anyway, but it didn't seem like they had anyone that could really stop Jokic at all on the offensive end. He was getting whatever he wanted to. So that's a great point too. They should add someone in the front court there. And we'll see what happens. But I think Kyrie would be a good fit in Miami. I don't say that very much, too often about Kyrie being a good fit anywhere, but I think he doesn't have a great defensive game as well too, so they can alleviate that as a system, and he can kind of just score 30 a night there if he wants to. So I think he would be a perfect piece, and we'll see what happens with that. But speaking of trades, before we go here, very excited about this. We spoke about it before we came on here. If I could run a trade Tobias Harris campaign, I think I would in a heartbeat and just spend 24/7 doing that. I'm sorry, he seems like a great guy, but I want him out of Philly. I don't want to pay him $40 million a year, or for next year at least if I'm the Sixers. So Bill Simmons on his podcast proposed a trade idea to send Bradley Beal to the Philadelphia 76ers in exchange for Tobias Harris and future draft picks. And I could not love that anymore if Washington wanted to do that. Now, I don't think the Sixers are one move away from reaching the NBA championship. They need to revamp that bench for sure. But I'd rather have four more years of Beal than one more year of Tobias Harris.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. I think Beal would be a great addition. I don't know if Washington is in rebuild mode yet. I mean, maybe if Porzingis opts out of his player option and he leaves, then maybe that almost forces them into rebuild mode, and then they look at that trade. But there's a bit of hope for you to get rid of Tobias now, right? So.
Yeah, and you get a guy that, you know, can score in the fourth quarter, can close a game. You know, they've been missing that since, you know, Jimmy left. So I would be really excited to bring Bradley Beal here. I don't think we're going to get 2017 Bradley Beal scoring 30, 35 a night. I'm not saying he's going to come here and save the franchise, but I think he could play well off of Embiid, and then you would have Harden and Maxey as well to go along with that. Now you're obviously paying three of those four guys heavy money, and then Maxey the next year after, you know, 30-plus million. So they might have little funds to improve that bench, but I'm all in for it. If it gets rid of Tobias, I think Bradley Beal would have a bigger impact here than Tobias for the next season. And it gets them a little bit closer to the championship, even though I don't think they're going to be in the finals next year with that move alone. My only concern about bringing Bradley Beal here, and I've been saying this pretty much all year, the Sixers are a horrible fast break team. They're very half court heavy, which is nice for Embiid, but Beal is not a fast break player at all. Is he faster than Harden? Sure, but you're still going to be half court heavy. So that's one of my hesitancies. But also, if you're going to re-sign Harden, you're going to be a half court team no matter what when he's on the court. He likes to slow the game down, so it could work. If you're going to go all in on a half court team, Beal is probably the guy you should target there.
Yeah, Beal, and then I would say go in on top rebounders that are on the market. You know, Harden's all about taking quick shots, getting quick shots. Maybe it also depends on, you know, the coach, the way he wants to run the offense and the way he wants to build the game plan out. So if he thinks Beal would fit, you know, that kind of role, then I think they'd go for it.
That's a great point too, because I feel like, so Nick Nurse is the coach now. He was with the Raptors. I feel like Toronto had those long guys every single season, like multiple, like 6'9", 6'10 guys that could shoot threes, but also rebound too. Huge wingspan. So yeah. I'm curious to see what he cooks up there. But lastly,
Ananobi supposedly is on the market, right?
Yeah, like he's probably going to get paid, I'm assuming, though. You know, he might get $25, $30 million a year for...
Maybe get him instead of Beal. Maybe that makes more sense.
Could work. Yeah, I'm not sure if I would prefer that, though. I mean, I do like Ananobi a lot, but I need a little bit more scoring. I think you just need that solidified number two scorer. Not that Ananobi can't be that, but I don't want to get to the fourth quarter.
Harden can't be that?
He can be that. I don't think he can consistently be that, though. I mean, the Sixers, when they beat Boston, they won because of him, but he's not going to do that every single night. I don't think that's the Harden anymore. Now, whether he's healthy or not, if he can get back to that level, that could be an argument. But I don't feel great if Embiid is being double teamed every fourth quarter that Harden can close out a game consistently.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. He's not really a play off the ball guy. So maybe that's part of the dynamic between him and Embiid. When they throw it down low, Harden's almost out of the play.
Yeah, I mean, I think Harden can be more aggressive too. That being said, I think he does have some left in the tank, but he kind of defers to Embiid. But again, bringing in Beal is not the worst case scenario as well, too, just because Harden has one more guy to catch and shoot as well. So Beal can create his own shot too, obviously, but that's another weapon that Harden can use off his dribbles and off the passes. So I wouldn't mind that at all. But my last point on Beal is my biggest concern is he hasn't played more than 60 games since 2018, 2019. Now, I know he's had injuries, and maybe he's not as interested in playing for the Wizards. You know, we're concerned about titles there because it's not realistic right now. But I'm curious to see if he came here, how many games he would actually play if he can stay healthy. But I think Washington should rebuild. I don't see a reason why you would hang on to Beal, pay him all that money. You know, Kuzma, I think, is a free agent, if I'm not mistaken, too, or, you know, close to it. So I don't see them staying together for a long time winning titles.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, you know, but you never know how a team's GM is going to think or what they want to do. Maybe they're thinking about ticket sales, you know, for one more year. So, but I agree with you. Basketball wise, they should probably rebuild and, you know, reload every in another few years. So.
Yeah, and for anyone out there that's wondering why they would trade for Tobias Harris and picks for compensation, Bradley Beal does have a no-trade clause, so he decides where he wants to go. He could put the kibosh on going to Oklahoma City or Portland, right? So we'll see what happens. There's going to be a ton of noise about that, but Embiid and Beal have pretty much expressed that they wanted to play together before. Embiid's been really vocal about that, wanting to play with him. He actually, per reports, preferred to play with Beal before they went to the Harden move 2 years ago. So we'll see what happens, but I'm really excited. There's some news that, you know, I can take with me when I go on vacation next week to the Outer Banks here, but I have some hope that maybe on our next podcast, Tobias Harris is not here anymore. So we'll
oh, that. You think it'll happen that quickly? I don't know.
I don't. It's probably not going to happen until July or, you know, in free agency, but we'll get to free agency for the next pod too, as well, the draft here. But yeah, NBA draft is literally what, like 13 days away or so, really close. So that's going to be an exciting time, even though we know who's going number one already. That's solidified.
Yeah, it's the Wembanyama era now, right? So
Spurs won the sweepstake. So that'll be on our next pod, guys. So it's going to be next week. But thanks for tuning in here. Really appreciate it. I'm Brian McCormick with Patrick, and we'll be back next week. You guys have an awesome weekend and try to enjoy life without NBA for a little bit.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pat. Have a good one.
You too.